I'm trying to go paperless. I told that to one of my colleagues, and she said that she'll believe it when she will see it. I have so much paper in my office.
Now, how long did you last?
Actually, you know, but the department is planning to move in about year and a half or something like that. So we would be nice if I if I can go paperless by that time. Now, I'd like to save the project report. So these are something that basically kind of expert overviews or summaries. Yeah, so people have investigated that and looked at the references, so I want to quickly find something on some topic. But if one of the students are looking for something quick to read, that is, let us say, 10, 12 pages, then these things would be nice to have. So it would be nice if I have them in electronic form, so it would be much easier to save them. So you need to hand them in electronically, so use the web CT, usual procedure. And I believe on Thursday, so Thursday before the class anytime. So but if you have printed out, thank you, so that would be good, so I can quickly take a look at it and see how you have done. So we have today we want to finish our discussion on the processor design, the multi-cycle processor design. And let me go ahead and distribute these. That is possible. So you cannot bring them in the exam, but it is possible that there could be something in here that could be in the exam. So let me divide that into two parts. So there are two of them. So this is, and here's another. So you can start on the other side. So here, so we had last time done a design, our multi-cycle design. And so we have the data flow part already designed. So we have the components, we have the registers, we have the ALU, and we have the connections, we have the multiplexers which perform the selection. And remember, when you want to go from point A to point B, you have to figure out the route from point A to point B, and that means you go through something. And if information is passing through a multiplexer, you need to figure out which of the inputs of the multiplexers you need to choose. So that's basically a similar type of problem as you would encounter if you're driving from one place to another place and looking at a map. So everyone has a copy of these two diagrams. Now, in this diagram, you will notice that the gray lines, so you have the control signals are shown in gray lines. So, for example, you see this multiplexer here, and this multiplexer has a control signal called register destination. And then you have some others. Now, a few of these control signals represent a multiple set of lines. For example, you have a set of lines called ALU source B.
ALU source B, which represents 2 bits.
And why is it 2 bits? Now we have this multiplexer here, which has 4 inputs. And you select one from 4 inputs, so obviously you need to use 2 bits. Remember that ALU source A has only 2 inputs. Now in this diagram, notice that in the data flow part, you have the registers and combinational logic. Now we have some memory blocks, and memory blocks, we are not worried about the details of timing there. So we are basically regarding memory blocks as something that you apply inputs and you get the outputs out. So we are assuming that the timing is basically controlled by the registers. So all the registers are triggered by a clock, and information flows from a register to a destination register. Now there you see some registers. As a PC is a register, there's an instruction register, there's a memory data register, and there you see this little A register and B register, and you see this register called ALU out, that is a register. So information flows from register to register. And now let us go ahead and now we will save about 15 minutes near the end to take care of the end of the course evaluation form, and I will ask for a volunteer to help take them, I guess, upstairs. So we will save, basically want to save some time. And now here, each instruction has multiple cycles. So let us look at the steps. Each instruction takes multiple clock cycles, and we want to look at the steps that need to go through. Some of the steps are common to all instructions. So let's look at step called instruction fetch. Now we want to describe these operations, and we are going to call them register transfer level operations, using a register transfer language. And here are examples. IR Now by this we mean take contents of the memory location addressed by the program counter, and you put that in the instruction register. And you can do that in one clock period, and simultaneously at the same time we do this program counter. We put program counter plus 4. So at the same time, okay, can you do these operations simultaneously? Take a look at the diagram. Would there be some clash if you do both of them at the same time?
Yes.
Where did you see a clash?
Well, wouldn't you change the row? But it would depend on if the program kind of changes before the
9-0. Yeah, that's a good observation. So in these operations, there is some delay built in. So notice that here program counter is being used, and assumption is that all the operations are synchronized. So the program counter would not get updated until the end of the clock cycle, because the operations are synchronized. So there is actually no problem with this. So when you say program counter plus 4 goes to program counter, this of course will get triggered. And after it triggers, then program counter will become program counter plus 4, and this actually would be the value before it has been incremented. So yeah, that's a good question. So you can, you notice that these two operations can be done in parallel. And now we are going to do both of these operations, and in a, we are, let's call that state zero. We do it. So we are basically describing a finite state machine or synchronous sequential circuit, and we will do this in what we will call state zero. So this is would be instruction fetch, and then next step would be instruction decode and register fetch. Now this comes sequentially after this. So in the next clock period, we are going to do this, and we are going to put something in register A, and we are going to put in register A the appropriate information from the register array as pointed by the bits 21 to 25. Remember, these are the bits in an instruction that give you the address of the first register. So address of the first register is used to access the register array. Contents of that register are brought out into register A, right? And similarly, in register B, which is the other register, now, time to time, you may want to look at the diagram that I have just handed out and see where how things are flowing. So here's register B, you're reading register B, and the address is provided here, which is read register 2, and that address is, of course, coming from instruction bits 16 to 20, which you see right here. So if you can read a map, how many of you are good in reading maps? Okay, so I guess many of you have some, so many of you are very good. And but I guess if you have to go from point A to point B, I guess you have to read the map. So of course now you can take a shortcut. Now you can, of course, use, what is that? MapQuest?
Yeah.
And there's other thing, what is that? There's MapQuest and Expedia. So you can look up. So now you don't have to be that good in reading a map. But still, I guess when you are driving, unless you have, unless you have some of the other things, then you may have to consult the map. But anyway, I think learning how to read a map is a good skill. And of course, in learning how to read this map is a skill that we need. Okay, so for A, we have to say ALU out. Now remember, ALU out is the name of a register. And you may wonder why we are doing this. Now this register transfer language is a rather simple one. You can, if you take a look at it, it should be fairly easy to figure out what we are implying. So for example, when you say this, so what we are saying is this into this register ALU out, we put the result of adding program counter, which would be, should be coming in here. And to that we are adding sign extended version of IR 15 to 0. So that we can see is 15 to 0 is coming through here. So program counter, and this thing sign extended, added to the ALU and putting it in ALU out. Register to register, so that's one clock period, right? And what we are going to do, we are going to do all of them in state one. Remember, these are operations happen in parallel. It's not, they are not one after the other. So we are not saying that this happens before this. They are all in parallel. And if you will take a look at the paths, you can see that they can all, signals can flow together. There would not be any conflict. There are no shared things that they need to be used at the same time. So we have gotten, why are we doing this? Now notice that this here is an anticipation. For branch. Now we don't know it yet. When we start this, we don't know that it is a branch. We have a branch. It may not be a branch. However, if it is a branch, would be nice to have this done. Now, if what happens that the instruction that you have fetched is not a branch,
ignore.
And you still do this,
right.
So what happens?
You just ignore the.
Right, yeah, so there's no harm. It doesn't override any useful information. So we'll just ignore what we have put in here. So that's fine. So sometimes you want to do something in anticipation. If it doesn't cause you any problems, then there's no penalty for doing that. And of course, if it is indeed a branch, then of course you are ahead by 1 clock period. But we do want to make our design as efficient as possible. And continuing next. Now, next, things are instruction dependent. So we had state 0, that was common, state 1, and after, from state 1 depends on the type of instruction you have. And we are going to show, okay, so let's look at this next step, which is instruction dependent. Now let's assume we have a memory reference instruction. Now what are the memory reference instructions we have? Load word and store word, right? So for memory reference instructions, we do this. Oh, I'm sorry. Remember, for load and store instructions, you need to calculate the address. You will be making a memory access, so you need to get the address. And that is what we are doing. We are taking contents of a register, adding the offset after sign extending it. So that will get us the address. However, and this we will do in, let's call it state 2. We will do that in state 2. Now it could be an R-type instruction. Now what are the R-type instructions we have? We have add, subtract, and a couple others, right? So those are the R-type instructions. So what is the next thing we need to do for R-type instructions? Let's say you want to do an add. So get the two operands in registers A and B, and then do what? Just add them, right?
Yes.
So whatever is the operation, we do this. And where op is whatever operation you have. Add, subtract, logical AND, logical OR, whatever. And we are going to do this in a state. Okay, what should we call this state? Should we call this state 6? Let's call it state 6. Okay, can you guess why? Why do you want to call it state 6? Because that's what it is called in the book. So, that's what it is called in this diagram. So, just to be consistent, it's just a label, right? Okay. And then we have branch. And let's see, what is the next thing to be done for? We have already done this for branch. And what basically we need to do is this. If A is equal to B, we want to put in the program counter the contents of ALU out. So the branch address that was already calculated, we calculated that in anticipation. And we go ahead and put that in the program counter. And we will do this in state 8. Okay. Questions so far? Okay, so this is the, okay, the next step. Let's call it the next step. Now the steps are numbered in our textbook, but I'm not using the numbering. So remember, we have figured out what to do in state 2 and what to do in state 6 and 8, right? So we have figured out what to do in state 6 and state 8. Okay, continuing then, next step, and let us call it R-type or memory access. Basically, I continue with this, and continue with this. Okay. Now here, we want to do a loader store. Now if it is a load, we want to do this. We want to read the memory location using the address that we have just put in ALU out. And we want to put that information in MDR. Or if it is a store, we want to do the other thing. We want to put the contents of register B as a store. And remember, we have already gotten the information into register B out. It's out of the register file, and it is in register B, and you simply need to put it in the memory. So we go ahead and put it in the memory for the store instruction. And this is, we are going to call this state 3. And we are going to call it state 5. So we got state 3 and 5. After state 2, you will go to state 3 or you will go to state 5. That's basically what we are saying. Okay. And continuing with this step, now if it is an R-type, R type, we basically need to finish the instruction, and that means we need to put the result in the specified register, and the register is specified for R type using bits 11 to 15 of the instruction. And this is R type finish, and this is state 7. So notice that this is load or store, and this was number 3 was what? That was load, and this was for store, and this is for R type, and this is state 7. So for the R type, you go to state 7 and do whatever do basically. Put the result in the destination register, perhaps result of an addition. And then there is not much left. Some instructions will need another step, and this other step is going to be, let's call it the write back step. This we are going to do in state 4. And state 4 would be needed only for the load instruction. And what do we do after this? So where do we go from 4 and 5 and 7 and 8, but we go back. Now this is for branch. And we have only one branch, branch of equal to. This is for branch. Now if you want, you can add a jump there. But I will let you think about how to add that. But let's take a look at what we have done so far. So we have described our design in terms of RTL. Now this is actually how they design processors today. The information flow is described in form of some language. We have used RTL. Now in industry, they will use something called VHDL, or they might use something called Verilog, or so they have their industrial versions of basically these things. And so they will describe their system using some kind of language, and then they will, now they of course have the tools that will do the compilation and so on. In our case, we need to know how the whole thing works, so we basically have to do it by hand. Any questions so far? Okay, so here is the state diagram. And then you can put in appropriate labels about the control signal. When do you go from a state to another state? What variables control the decision to go from here to here, or here, or here, or here. So basically you fill up your state diagram, and then you need to design a state machine. In other words, that you need to design a finite state machine. And remember this oval here? This is the control unit. And this control unit that you see up there, which has a number of lines going out, this is the control unit. This is a control unit, and coming in here are these lines, operation code bits 5 to 0. So that will be used to make a decision about what kind of instruction is it. So those bits will tell it whether to go from here to here, or from here to here, or from here to here. And now, so you have the complete specification of your finite state machine or synchronous sequential circuit. You have the inputs and outputs. You have the inputs and outputs. You have the state diagram, and you can convert that into a state table. And you can go ahead and design your finite state machine. And you know everything about, almost everything, about how to design finite state machine. And in fact, this shows the further steps, the diagrams. And since you know the theory behind designing finite state machines, you don't have to go through this, but basically what you need, okay, how many flip-flops we need? Here we have 8 states, maybe 9 or 10, maybe a few more. How many flip-flops we need?
One for each transition.
One for each transition? We need enough state variables so that each state has a distinct combination. So we have 9 states there, right? 0 to 8. So 2 raised to how much will give you 9 or more? 4, right? So you need 4 flip-flops, right? Need 4 flip-flops. So basically you do your design, you take your 4 flip-flops, there are 4 of them, and now you can design your combinational logic. Combinational logic. And so here, going into this combinational logic are the 4 state variables. And then you have these outputs, which are the control signals. And then, of course, since it is a finite state machine, you need to generate inputs to these flip-flops, just like we did before. And here we have the inputs. Now, what are the inputs to this finite state machine? And inputs happen to be bits, those bits, the operation code. And remember, operation code bits, these are actually, these bits are the instruction. Operation code is bits, what bits are these? Bits 26 to 31. Basically, the 6 bits of the operation code. So here, those are the bits here. So this is the operation code going in, which is your instruction bits 26 to 31. And since you're in the procedure, you just design it the way you like. Maybe if you want PLA, you can design it using the PLA, or if you want to design it using any other way. So this could be a PLA, for example. You just do your PLA minimization, get a PLA, and your PLA is going to look like this. But that's something that we had done before, so nothing new there. And notice here, in this diagram, you see these, it mentions what control signals need to be activated. So let's go through one of them. Okay, how about let's look at state one. Okay, how many of you have a very good eyesight? You can read really fine things. How many of you can read that these things in state one? Okay, raise your hand if you have very good eyesight. Okay, rest of you need glasses, maybe? I guess I definitely need glasses. You can read? Okay, so you have good eyesight. So you don't need glasses. Actually, we could use this for an eye test.
No idea. No test for 470, and we'll just do reading from this. And,
yes.
That counts.
If you can decode what's written in gray, you will need.
The higher accuracy, the higher your grade.
Oh, you mean that if you can read small type, you get extra points?
Not extra points.
Not just
extra
points, just
the points. Oh, yeah. Other points. Reading small type. That's a good suggestion. I should check that out if it is illegal. Okay, so let's try state one. Oh, incidentally, notice here. Notice this table here. This table says exactly the same things what I had said, right? So this table describes the same thing. And in fact, you can see that in this table, in state one, which is the second state, I want to do this. And I guess I had used arrows, and this use equal, but doesn't matter. Just a slightly different notation. And okay, look at that diagram and see if you can figure out, as is map reading, see if you can figure out what bits you would need to specify in order to perform this. Extend. Bits from the instruction register 0 to 15 shifted by 2 bits. Okay. Okay, let's see if you can read this map. Okay, what signals do you need to activate to put this into register A? Take a look at this diagram. Now notice that in register A, it doesn't show any control signals. And that means register A is loaded every clock cycle. And you will notice that in order to do this, you don't need to activate any lines. It will happen automatically, because the way we have done it here. Putting in that, this information in register B, it will happen every clock period. You don't need to activate this. What do you need to do to perform this addition? Okay? Remember. Okay, how do we do addition? Using the ALU, right? Okay, let's take a look at the ALU. And this ALU has this multiplexer, and what are these lines called? This line is called ALU source A, this one line. So this is ALU source A, talk about that assignment I gave you last time. I guess I called it a non-assignment, but you still have to do it. So I hope you have done it. I will come to that next. And here we have coming in here is number 4, and something coming here, something coming here. Okay. In order to perform this addition, what do you need? And here's a line to control, and this line, what do we call this line? ALU source B. And this is actually a pair of lines. Okay. Now you will notice this is coming from the program counter. So what do you want ALU source A?
Zero.
Okay, we want ALU source A equal to 0. Okay. And so you're saying that basically we want this, right? And now what do you want here? Okay, it's not B, it's not number 4, it's one of either 2 or 3.
So
should we take 2 or should we take 3?
3.
So it is something that is sine extended and it is further shifted left by 2 bits. So it looks like it's number 3, right? So we take this. So 3 is of course 1, 1. And so we basically take this, and this of course goes out to the register called ALU out. So the conclusion is that what we need for state A is okay. Okay, there is another thing that we need. We need to do the ALU op. We need to select the appropriate ALU operation, and that we need to select 00. That's the same ALU op that it actually works in this way. We have this ALU control thing. This is the same ALU control box we had in the previous design. And here we have coming in something, and here we have coming in ALU R. So this is ALU R. And if you were to take a look at the table we had before, you will notice that according to that table, ALU R needs to be 00. So, in order to do this, we need to select ALU source A equal to 0. We need to select ALU source B equal to 1, 1. ALU up, we need to 00. Now remember, design, you cannot do design from memory. You need to have your design documents in front of you, like the state diagram, this diagram, any sub-circuits that you have designed previously. For example, this circuit we had designed previously. So you have these documents in front of you, and then you use these design documents to put together your final design. So these are the control signals that you activate. Now similarly, you can figure out for the others, and if you will notice here, small type, that's what they have there. They basically specified what are the control signals needed. And so basically you go ahead and synthesize your design your finite state machine, and you would have completed your design. and that would be the end of the design. And then of course after you have done your design, typically you want to verify to make sure design is correct. So you will simulate it, you will build it using a simulator, just like you did, you had simulated a circuit, right? For example, what was that package we had used?
Logic.
Yeah, logic. So something like that, or maybe something more industrial strength. You will build it, verify, make sure it works, check out the performance, and when it is done, you send it out, and maybe you will get it built on a chip. So that is our multi-cycle design. And notice in multi-cycle design, there are some operations we do in parallel because we want to maximize performance. Sometimes we do some operations in parallel. Another thing we had noted, sometimes you do some operations in anticipation. It's not guaranteed, but some operations could happen, and sometimes you can do some things in anticipation, and that way you can shave off a few clock cycles from the total number of clock cycles required in your design. So this is the end of our discussion. Questions or comments on the multi-cycle design? So that is kind of the end of the this part of our course, and let us now start with our review. But let us reflect on our design before I erase this and see if you have any questions.
Why do you do the left shift by 2 bit sign extension?
Okay, question is, so why do we do this? Now this is our this is for the branch instruction, right? Okay, so basically we want to put the branch address in the program counter, right? And we calculate branch address by taking current value of the program counter and which is already incremented by 4, right? In the previous step, remember that? Okay, so this is the incremented program counter, to that we add this. But why are we doing this? That's a good question. Okay, who can give an answer to this?
Because it's, you have to multiply it by 4 to, because every 4 is
a mixture. That is true. Because the branch offset is specified in terms of number of words, and your addresses are for bytes. And of course, all the instructions are aligned to the word boundary, so all the instructions have the least significant bits 00. So that way you have a bigger range in within which you can branch, so you just fill in those 2 zeros. That's the basic idea. Any other questions on this design? So notice that in our first design, we had a unit called control unit, and it was purely combinational. Now that was a specialized design. Typically it is not like that. But this is much more common. So this type of design is very common. So your combination circuit will always be a finite state machine. Now this is one way to design finite state machine. There are other ways. So people will have some other, this is one. This is a simple structure, right? Your flip-flops, your PLA. Now you can have some fancier structures. Some people use something they call micro-programmed control design. So they will have a slightly different structure here, and they call it micro-programmed design. But it's just a different way of basically implementing this. So a different way of designing the finite state machine. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so now let us go into review. And we do want to save some time for end of the class evaluation form, so we want to save about 15 minutes for that. So we have about 10 minutes or so. So for questions from anywhere, now we need to have a little quiz which will include some of these things that we have done. So let me prepare a quiz, and let me make the quiz maybe the final is on Monday, right? Everyone knows final is on Monday? What time?
Monday
at 9. Yeah, I think that's right. I looked that up. And so it's a 9, it's a 10 after 9, right? And it should be right here. So it's a 2-hour final. And the final is comprehensive. And so everything is included in the final. So everything that we have discussed here, everything that you have done, as part of homework or lab assignments, whatever, so they are all included. And now, what are the things that were included in the second test? What was the last thing we included there in the second test? Well, probably it doesn't matter because everything is included anyway. Okay, so we had to include performance, right? So we have to include performance here, right?
So will it be mostly concentrated on material post midterm?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. Any suggestions?
Yes.
What do you think?
Pick out the easiest things. Like 1 plus 1.
Okay. So I think it would be a combination. So there would be several questions from the parts which we had covered in test 1 and test 2. However, there may be proportionately more material from the later part. So it would be definitely something from... So I'm not quite sure how things would be divided. So maybe, I don't know. So if divided into 33%, 33%, 33%, could be something like this. Maybe, but I haven't designed the final yet. But it is possible that there could be slightly more emphasis. But of course, it will not be all the later material. So there's substantial part of it, perhaps like 66% or something like that, could be from earlier material. So that you still need to know that material. But of course, there is a lot of things are interconnected. Some of the things we talked about later, they rely on things you had done earlier. So when we define the instruction set architecture for MIPS, we of course needed it to do this design. The hardware design we saw earlier, combinational design, finite state machine design that we saw, we needed that here, so it's all connected. And you can bring your green card again, don't write anything into it. And this time, let's see, how much are we planning to sell that if you forget to bring your green card? So we have to set some price, giving them out free.
-$5.
So, yeah, bring your card. And okay, so let's start our review. So after let's take a couple of minutes to get our review started, and we will continue our review next time. Questions from I guess earlier part of the semester. Any suggestions for the review? Anything that you think would be good to look at?
Answers.
that would be one good thing. Okay, so so I will have a quiz ready. And so I will have the quiz ready. I will try to get it ready sometime tomorrow. But I'm not quite sure if that will be done, but definitely by Thursday. So I will give you a couple of days to take that quiz. So you can take that quiz. That quiz will cover the last part. So in this class, we talked about now, as you must have noted, this course builds on the previous similar lower level course you had taken, and we spent quite a bit of time looking at hardware design because we wanted to do this, and that is some of that is in the appendix, which is not in the book, but which is on the CD. There's some nice stuff on that CD. There's some things that we haven't looked at, and if you're interested in architecture, definitely it has some rather interesting things there. So we saw combinational design. We saw sequential design. We saw optimization for combinational design. Carnot maps. We saw PLA minimization. These things are often PLAs. And as I had mentioned, for PLAs, the objective is to minimize the number of product terms. So that's the key to minimizing PLAs. And then we looked at I forgot when we looked at computer arithmetic, but we looked at computer arithmetic. So starting at the beginning, of course, your signed numbers, unsigned numbers, addition, subtraction. We looked at how to do multiplication, and we looked at an optimized algorithm for multiplication, and we saw how you can do things step by step. Algorithmically, you can perform multiplication. We did not see division, but there are some things you still should know. One thing you should know is that if you take divide something this big by a divisor which is this big, then you will get a quotient and a remainder which are this big, right? Which is the reverse of multiplication. So if you multiply this and this, your answer could be as big as this. That's the basic idea. And the type of hardware we saw for multiplication, for division, you can use similar hardware, but since we have seen multiplication as an example, that is enough. And we also saw design of a multiplier. So how and we looked at floating point numbers, floating point number formats. We looked at specialized floating point numbers. For example, 0, which is all zeros, that is a specialized floating point number. Denormalized numbers, that's a specialized floating point number. And we saw how to add floating point numbers together. And the basic trick, of course, there was that you align them by making the exponents equal. So that's how we added to floating point numbers. And we also talked about floating point multiplication. We looked at a floating point multiplier design, which looks like a complex type of circuit. But if you look at it, you can basically trace through it. You can see how it works. It basically does the things that we have said. For example, adjusting the exponents and adjusting the matrices and doing the addition, seeing which exponent is smaller and rounding and so on. Any questions in computer arithmetic? Okay, I guess we will continue our review next time. So let's go ahead with end of the class evaluation form. And we need a volunteer to take them up to the department. So volunteer,